Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show on this beautiful, cloudy, rainy day on the Charlottetown waterfront. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And we're going to start the show. If you're new, this show is all about PEI, Prince Edward Island real estate, everything PEI. And for that matter, we cover topics that cover real estate in a general terms for all of North America, because it's basically all the same stuff, isn't it?
It is pretty much the same, generally speaking.
So with this show, we bring you over four decades of experience, Patty and I working in the industry 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, less sleep, having handled thousands of transactions, every one of them more interesting than the last.
Yeah, you think you have a good grip on the business and that you've seen it all, and then around the corner is another new case scenario. So it's an exciting business where you're always learning. Sometimes you're caught off guard and you couldn't have foreseen or predicted situations and events that may arise or happen, but hopefully, I think for the most part, we're equipped to handle them.
If you go to school, let's say you get your MBA, you come out of there, you think you're going to take over the world. The fact of the matter is there's one thing that the school can't provide to you, regardless of how much money you pay or what university or college you go to, which is what?
Experience.
Right. So I was listening to Kevin O'Leary the other day, you know, Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank and Dragon's Den.
Yes, I do.
See, you're not a big fan.
I never said anything.
And the one thing he did say that made perfect sense is you can't buy experience. Carrying on, as we usually do, our Facebook group, if you're not a member already, be sure to check it out. Search for Moving to Prince Edward Island, spelt out and not abbreviated, with Michael and Patty. We're up to 663 members. And we did that in less than 49 days.
Yeah, and that's up to the beginning of September, which is where we are right now, September 2025.
Right. So we're getting about 13.53 members a day joining. That's actually escalated. And I worked out here if there's 164 days left of the year, we'd have 2,218 members. I think that's going to be closer to 5,000 based on what I've seen. So that's awesome. If you're looking for a platform to discuss PEI real estate, Prince Edward Island in general, or just real estate in general, check it out, become a member, and fire away with any questions, which brings us to the questions.
Yes. Well, and I was also going to say, to become a member of the Facebook group allows you to be a part of a community of like-minded individuals. There's no solicitation, and if once in a while there's something that does appear, we're pretty much on top of it. And if you are somebody that ended up making a post, we'll probably end up deleting it or private messaging you and asking you if you could please stop, because that's not what this is about. It's about helping people with decisions, whether or not they're wanting to buy or sell. We give snapshots of the podcast episodes. Right now, there's three being featured every week. Once we get caught up, then there will be the one release a week, which is consistent with the actual podcast itself.
Absolutely. Can I plug my new bug spray that lasts for an entire month?
What is your new bug spray?
That's just it. It lasts for a month. I'll plug that on the Facebook group. I just made that up.
Okay.
Okay, so we do actually have a couple questions that came from the Facebook group, which we answered, but it's very difficult to answer questions in detail in text. At least I don't have the inclination to write a novel every time someone asks a question, do you?
No, it's better to pick up the phone and have a conversation with them.
So this question, and this is actually a common question, I've had this a couple times, particularly from American buyers that live in the South, reasonably so. Hi, Michael and Patty. Really enjoy MAPS. That's the Michael and Patty Show acronym. Thinking of moving our young family to PEI from Uxbridge, Ontario. Can you comment on house insurance on coastal properties in PEI? How easy is it to get? And are some house locations uninsurable? Also comment on cell phone, internet coverage on the island, any issues in some areas? I would say this isn't, and this is how I replied, it's not Florida, it's not California, and it's not South Carolina. I guess California would be more forest fires and coastal erosion. But having said that, house insurance, unless you would say otherwise, I haven't found difficult to get here, and it's certainly nowhere near the expense that you would see in Florida. Now, I have had a lot of family living in Florida for decades. And, you know, when you buy a house there, one of the major considerations is not your property taxes. Typically, it would be the cost of house insurance.
I do find, having moved here from Ontario approximately 16 years ago, that our property insurance is pretty affordable by comparison. I know I was paying, and it's a little different now because things have adjusted over the years. And I don't know what Ontario property insurance runs these days, so I can't make a statement on that. However, it is quite affordable. It is still less today than what I was paying in Ontario 16 years ago. And I have the Cadillac, if you will, of property insurance packages.
Because you're totally risk adverse.
Yes. And the insurance company that I'm with, if you go so many years without any claims, they actually give you little perks and discounts and that. So, I mean, there's some benefits to hopefully having proper protection, but also not exhausting and filing everything through. So property insurance is not an issue. You can get insurance tip to tip on the island. They don't discriminate, or it's not. Can't get insurance in these areas, at least not that I'm aware of. I've never heard that before.
And one of the people you can talk to or companies could probably be Prince Edward Island Mutual, PEI Mutual. From what I've heard, they insure about 75% of the residences here in PEI and do a great job. So if you do want to get it straight from the horse's mouth, reach out to Prince Edward Island Mutual.
Yeah, I thought it was about 70%, and that was those were my numbers prior to Fiona. So I don't know where the stats are unless these are current and you've pulled those, Michael. But it was approximately 70%, I believe, prior to Fiona, which happened on September 24th, 2022 here on PEI.
Actually, this is just comes from the collection of useless knowledge I store in my head on a daily basis.
Okay.
One of the other things you might want to check out is the coastal erosion reports. I did post a bad example. It's a good example, but it's a bad area, which is high erosion, on the Facebook group. So if you want to check out that map, check it out on the Facebook group. Basically, what you do is if you Google gov.pe.ca coastal erosion report, you can send in the PID number and or the address, and they will send you a detailed report as well as a little brochure that tells you how to interpret the report. I'm sure you've ordered a ton of those. I've probably ordered dozens.
Yeah, I have ordered. I wouldn't say dozens, but I have ordered them. I typically put that in the hands of my clients. And I did see that post on the group, the Facebook group.
How come you didn't like it?
Did I not like it?
No, you didn't.
Okay, well, maybe I'll have to go back and do that.
Maybe I'll delete it.
I did see it, and it is valuable, and it does give an example of what you could expect.
Cellular coverage. I think the best way to answer that is my understanding there's two basic backbones. So regardless of what you have, whether you have Fido or Bell Rogers and the 50 other brands that are out there, Kudo, they're probably using a Rogers or a Bell backbone. In other words, the cell sites are provided by those two providers. So what I would do is I would bring up their coverage maps to see what areas they cover. And I'm not sure if it's in green, yellow, and red, or whatever the case may be. My personal experience has been Bell is better. They've had more towers and better coverage. What about you? You're on Bell probably?
I am on Bell, and I have been since I've moved to PEI. I have come across others who disagree with me and they're with different providers and they feel they're superior. However, the question is, if you can get good cellular coverage, there are some dead zone areas where, again, just our industry, our business, I typically can spend quite a few hours every week on my phone while I'm driving to different appointments. And there's probably I would say half a dozen areas on the island. As I'm driving through, I may lose my call. But it's such a short little distance that, I mean, I just go ahead and call them back again and say, sorry about that, but there are a few areas.
Notably, I think you're going to find if you're in a remote area up west or down east, as we say it, you're going to find that there are areas, and I don't know if they fix this. Sorry, I'm just getting over a cold. But for the most part, probably 80% of the island is covered. Keep cellular coverage in mind because some of the wireless internet systems actually tie into the cellular system for their feed.
Well, that's all your department. I just know how, as a consumer, what my experience is.
And if you're looking for internet, the PEI government and Bell is in the process of installing fiber optic everywhere into every house. It doesn't matter where you are. You could have the most ramshackled log cabin at the end of a 5-mile road. They're going to be running fiber to you. And we've seen fiber in some of the oddest places, haven't we?
Yes. Yeah. They are slowly working, and they've done a great job, I think, so far in covering many, many of those little remote areas. If it's not near you, it will be coming to you soon.
And alternatively, up until that point arrives, you can use Starlink. You can use the other satellite providers. There's internet providers that use the cellular LTE or 5G as a backbone. We've got a multitude of wireless private suppliers. So if you are looking at a place and you're working from home, which has become more commonplace since COVID, investigate what the neighbors are using, and they probably be a pretty good source of information as to how you can connect.
Yeah, that was a great question.
It was an excellent question, and that was from Jeff from Uxbridge.
Yeah.
Do you want to answer this one? I'll ask the question. This is from Amy. Can you explain the heating cooling systems that are different from central heating air? And which ones are better than the other? So typically in places like Ontario, you would have a central forced air heating system that would accompany a humidifier because you get very dry air in Ontario. So the humidifier would bring that humidity level up. And then optionally, you would strap on a air conditioning compressor, which would give you cold air. And that furnace would probably be heated by natural gas that would be pumped or piped to the house. We do not do that in PEI. Natural gas is not piped to any house in the province.
So most of the homes on PEI, and I'm not going to say most as in statistics and that, because things are slowly changing. More and more homes are installing heat pumps because of government programs and that. They're able to, you know, try to become more green or efficient, not using fuel such as oil inside of homes. I have many clients that are removing their oil-fired systems, their oil boiler. So what we typically have are hot water baseboard, which would have a boiler system either with electric, oil, or propane. Those are our three fuel types and sources, which then would heat different types of systems. So you can have forced air, hot water baseboard, there's radiators. We have electric baseboards, which is just pretty, you know, standard all across Canada for sure. And propane fireplaces, that is another heat source that you'll find inside of homes. Some in more higher end homes have the geothermal systems, but I don't find those to be as high in numbers. I've only come across, I don't know, maybe
very
there might
few.
Be a dozen of them across the island that I've come across. So those are our typical heat sources, unless you had something else to offer or add, Michael.
The only thing I would add is typically if you're looking at a used house, something that's 5, 10, 20, 30 years old, they're going to have oil fired, water fed to radiators. Anything else is going to be a newer system, typically heat pumps, but you do not want a heat pump as an only source of heat because sometimes they have problems functioning at really, really cold temperatures. Would you agree?
Yes. And so just with regards to the other two fuel types then, the propane and the oil. So propane, we don't own our tanks here. Those are owned by our suppliers. We rent or lease them on an annual basis, and they come up, and most homes are on an automatic fill. So the providers have a schedule and they know based on the season, your individual usage, when they need to schedule their fills for that particular property. So that's one fuel source. Now, the other is oil. Preferred are like Roth steel oil tanks or fiberglass oil tanks, double-walled steel tanks. Those are the ones that are insurable on PEI. They preferably should be indoors. That kind of went back and forth, and who knows what it's going to be in 2026. They may want them back outside, but right now it is better to have them inside, usually with a drip pan or something underneath. And those, again, are on automated fills. So you set up your schedule, and if it's the same provider as the previous owner, they already know based on the insulation level, the seasons, the previous property owner's usage, they can pretty much determine and predict when you need your fills, and then you just receive your little pink slip in your mailbox.
Moving along, this week I had an agent tell me, after submitting an offer to me that was absolutely horrible and poorly written, that she has 20 years experience. And I thought, back to MAPS, the Michael and Patty show, what do we recommend? At the same time, I'm looking at real estate in Halifax, in Southern Ontario, and of course, I want to connect myself with a good agent. So what do we tell our listeners to do to eliminate 90% of the noise when picking an agent?
Well, we have said 10,000 full-time hours is usually what any industry, any business would consider an expert in their field.
10,000 hours equates to 5 years, 2,000 hours a year, which is typical. And the other thing we look for is 1,000 transactions. And to take that a step further, we want somebody that's done those transactions and that time in that market. You will see agents advertise that they have 35 years experience, hypothetically, but 32 of it was in the Yukon, and they just moved to PEI. So really, their only on-the-ground experience here is that 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, or they've had their license for that many years, but they may have done 1 or 2 transactions a
That's
year.
That's where I was going to next. So this agent waves the old, I've been licensed for 20 years, and I'm thinking, well, was this your third transaction? Because that's just like saying, I've been an auto mechanic for 40 years, but I've only worked on one car.
Yeah, so another way to look at that, instead of just calling them transactions, is I've assisted 1,000 individuals or 1,000 families, 1,000 couples. And with that comes every, as we had mentioned at the beginning of the episode, every different case scenario, which the benefit to you for experience is this agent would be able to hopefully predict or foresee maybe some issues or a problem and be able to circumvent and help either lessen it or avoid it altogether, which you may not even be aware that they're working behind the scenes doing.
Imagine this, you're Captain Highliner, Captain Patty, and you have a vessel and you're traveling to Europe from New York. Now, if I was hiring Captain Patty and she had 50 years, all of which was in the water navigating from New York to Europe, I would much rather want that than somebody's grandson that just got his first boat and this is his first voyage, wouldn't you?
100%.
And that also applies when you're hiring accountants or lawyers or any professionals, painters, plumbers, electricians. I want an expert.
Yeah, it just makes me feel like I'm going to arrive at my destination, hopefully safely and with as few little surprises and issues, because that's actually a really good analogy to use, is being out to sea, because there's so many variables and things that you can't control, you know, with the weather and, you know, just there's so many things that could happen. And you want somebody experienced with regards to assisting people, assisting families, And whether you call it transactions, I like to refer to it as servicing over a thousand.
How many times have you been involved in a real estate transaction that turned into a mutiny? They want to shoot the captain, which is you, because they always look to the real estate agent because they're always the ones that are responsible for everything going wrong, even though most of the time it isn't. Here's a fun fact. What percentage of real estate agents actually respond to a real estate inquiry in North America? I grabbed this from one of the real estate podcasts I listened to. What percentage do you think that is?
Well, I was very, very surprised to read this, which is why I asked you, where did you get this number from? It's very concerning, and it should be concerning to a seller. Again, why pick an agent who has experience? This is why. I'll let you share your number.
Well, I don't think this really has anything to do with picking an agent with experience. I think a lot of it comes down to, in my opinion, there's probably a lot of them are working full-time jobs. A lot of them just aren't serious about real estate, or maybe they've been in business for 50 years and just can't get motivated, and they're out in the golf course or sailing or boating or biking. I don't know. But I do know this. I do know that when you formulate your question, that question should have some content to it. And the emails and particularly comments from realtor.ca, a lot of them are deletion worthy.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is these ones that email you and they say, and it's, let's just say it's a building lot. Can you send me more information on this property? Is that deletion worthy?
Well, I
let's give you an option B, because
I don't delete.
Option B would be, hi, my name's Patty. I see this building lot that's located in Sunbury Cove Estates in St. Nicholas. I've been looking at this subdivision for a few years. A friend of mine owns a house there and built it brand new a couple of years ago. They really enjoy the location. I see this lot is priced quite affordably and it's on sale. Do you have a survey of the property so I can see the exact measurements and the dimensions of the buffer zone? Is B going to get a response, or is A, or both? Or are you going to delete them both because you're too busy, because you're powerhouse Patty, you haven't got time?
No. And when I say experience, I just mean because they would have their experience and full time. I probably should add that, because they have their systems and processes in place to be able to take care of the inquiries that come in. So it's 47% of inquiries on properties that do not get responded to. And again, if the second one, a little long-winded, but the second one would have definitely received a better response because they actually offered a little bit more about themselves. So I know they're a legitimate person who's not sitting on their couch and just clicking send for more information, send for more information. I know they're a little more serious. So the added content to the question would definitely provide a better valued response.
Would you say that if they texted you or called you, that would even put them on a higher priority list?
Not necessarily. If they called me, yes, absolutely. But texting, here's what I find my problem with receiving texts is, hi, looking for more information on, and they'll just put the MLS number. I don't know who they are. I don't know if there's some kind of bot, if it's somebody phishing, I would rather them send me an email with a little bit more information than a random text, because I don't know who I'm engaging into a conversation with. I mean, I can Google their phone number, which I highly recommend if you're an agent, making sure that you do your due diligence. Emails are typically a little easier to be able to identify the party, but you usually end up giving a name in an email. Text, that's my only reason why. Unless they've given me a good detailed text.
The best way to communicate with people, they say in sales, is number one, in person. Number two, over the phone. Number three, via text. Number four, email. So email is actually the worst way to start communicating with people. But what we do get in text and with WhatsApp all the time, do you ever get these emails?
Yep.
Hi, it's me.
Yeah, I do.
Right. Well, yeah. I get those on properties, and I'm sure you do, where people will say, can you call me about a property? Delete. I don't know where it is, what it is, who you are, and I don't even know your name. What do? Phone you and say, his buddy there?
Yeah.
Who's got a text from buddy, right? So be detailed in your messaging to agents. That's probably why that percentile is so low.
I was just going to say, so that's in the defense of the buyers. Now, to put it from a seller's point of view, you want to make sure that how many inquiries have you received on my property? I don't feel that a seller should have to micromanage their agent, but you should feel confident that your agent has the systems and processes in place to make sure that they don't drop the ball on inquiries, because if they end up calling another agent who has a different property or even something similar, that other agent doing their job and representing their seller is going to try to draw their attention and focus to that.
Just last week, I got an email from a crown prince from Uganda. Boy, am I going to be selling him some stuff. This next one's for you.
So as a buyer, with regards to services and setting up things like your electricity and your fuel, again, oil and propane, I have come across, and I was a little bit flabbergasted over this, that this particular buyer was instructed to set up their electricity on the day of closing.
Instructed by who?
By their agent. And once I picked up my jaw from my desk because I could not believe what I was reading, I am letting you know, if you are a buyer looking to set up, or you're in the process, you've just bought a property, it's closing in a couple weeks' time, my rule of thumb is I notify my clients about 3 weeks prior to closing that they need to start making sure they have all of these services in place. Call Maritime Electric. You will, if you're an off-island individual relocating here, you will end up having to provide a security deposit, to Maritime Electric, and probably for any service that you're going to set up for your home. However, there'll be an online form to fill out. There's a little bit of work to do. It's not lengthy, but not something you do on day of closing. By the time that happens and the deposit amount has been processed, and I just feel that was poor advice. Set your services up at best approximately 2 to 3 weeks. You'll also find out, did the seller call to disconnect? So you're kind of doing a service to the seller, because if the seller hasn't disconnected their Maritime Electric service, and that's most of the island, the only place that's on a different electricity grid, if you will, is the city of Summerside. They have their own, the city of Summerside's electricity.
But Most of Summerside. Some of it is still on Maritime Electric.
Yes. But the rest is Maritime Electric, which is why I'm using and speaking of them. You may be able to provide a little reminder to the seller. Hey, I'm trying to set up my electricity, or my buyers are trying to set up electricity. They're not able to. According to Maritime Electric, your seller client, and this is the communication between realtors, your seller client hasn't yet ordered their disconnect. Could you do that and give me the confirmation number so that my buyers will be able to go ahead and set up their services? So not the day of closing or the day before closing. I think that's poor advice.
Well covered. And most lawyers' offices, or some of them, will actually make sure they are on top of the services, namely electric, which is probably going to be your number one priority moving in. Speaking from experience, having bought a house where I showed up on Friday night and there was no lights because the lawyer's office actually contacted Summerside, and it was actually under Maritime Electric because it was just slightly outside of their main coverage area.
Yeah, and something that I wanted to also say, because as a seller, so my seller client, this particular closing, ordered the disconnect for 9 a.m. that morning. So if there was nobody that was going to be using or utilizing Maritime Electric services going forward, or at least not set themselves up for it yet, my seller also did probably something that they shouldn't have, which was disconnecting it at 9 a.m. They're responsible for that property. If it was the winter months, it could have got into a bad situation where pipes could have froze. And so you really want to make sure that if you're a property owner, then don't disconnect the services until the day after closing. Usually Maritime Electric will say, we're in this area on this date and this date. We can't do the disconnect. It's either the day before or the day after. Always opt for the day after closing, because there are situations where properties don't close and you want to make sure that there is electricity service or coverage for that property, especially because of our climates here in Canada and our cold winters.
I've recently received an offer on a property and these guys just love this house and they want to close immediately. However, the house is on a well. The mortgage requires a water test, both chemical and bacteria, to be done by a third party. When I listed this house about 2 or 3 months ago, one of the things I mentioned, and I believe I did this in front of you, is get your water test ordered right away. Because if it does come back bad, you could be delayed by 2, 3, 4 weeks for retests. So what did they do, like most homeowners? Well, I shouldn't say most, some. They didn't do anything.
Oh, no.
So here we are. We want to close this house in 20, 30 days. And we're risking that, one, we can get the water test back, and two, that it actually comes back good. So if you are going to list your house, these water tests are typically good for 3 or 6 months. It's a requirement of the lenders supplying a mortgage. If there is a mortgage, it's not a requirement for conveyance. You can buy a house without a water test, but if you are going to request one, I would request both bacteria and chemical and have it done by a third party. Agreed?
Yes. And the other reason for that, now, most lenders, and again, they have the right at their discretion to change how they move forward or process these, but most lenders will close with what we call a holdback. A holdback is an amount that the lawyers on representing the buyer and the seller mutually agree to the amount, worst case scenario, to replace the well. So if you are in that situation and they do, and on average, I'm typically seeing around 8,000.
That number gets bigger every year. It used to be 1,000, then 2,000 and 4,000, 5,000. Now we're in 8 and 10. What's it going to be next year? 25,000?
I don't know. But on average, I'm seeing around 8,000. I do see some that are 5,000 and I have seen some that are more. And so they will hold back. What that means is they're holding back that amount of money from the sale. So the buyer's lawyer would be keeping $8,000 held in trust until the seller's able to provide a clear water quality certificate. And just know, clear water quality certificate, aside from chemistry being, you know, good and there's no issues there, it has to be a zero. A one is not considered a pass, regardless if the province says that this water is still deemed, you know, to be drinkable. According to lenders, they want a zero as a pass.
Well, now, it depends on the lender, too.
No, I've never encountered one that approved a one. I'm in my 16th year of real estate, still have not.
But how many transactions have you done? Two?
How many transactions? I like to look at it as how many people have I serviced. And no, it is way over two. In fact, I think I'm just under 1,000 myself. So the holdback. The lawyers have agreed to a mutual holdback amount. Now they will still proceed typically with the closing. So the buyers get to move into the house. The sellers now are short, let's say that $8,000. What if that seller needed that $8,000 in order to make their purchase going forward? They've just put themselves into a situation, which is why we stress a little bit about this, because now they're going to be short $8,000 on their purchase going forward. So you really want to make sure you stay on top of this, know your situation, know your numbers, try to get that water test done as early on as you possibly can, not done by yourself. A water test, according to our agreement of purchase and sale, is to be done by a third party who does not have a vested interest in the sale of the property. So just keep that in mind. It cannot be you bringing in the sample. So if you've assuming or you forgot the conversation, because I know as real estate agents, Michael, we dump a lot of information on our seller clients' lap when we go through the process. It's a bit of a whirlwind. They're worried about staging their home and getting it cleaned and signing all the documents and all this extra stuff that we talk to them about can easily be missed. So please do not hesitate to reach out to your agent. We know there's a lot of information. We take it for granted because we do this every single day. We stress the importance of being on top of your water test.
But if I'm listing with Powerhouse Patty, don't I get a Powerhouse Patty listing package which spells out what I need to do, complete with checklists, cartoons, and sketches?
I don't know about the cartoons and sketches, but yes, there are documentation in our seller's guide that would be able to walk you through the process so that hopefully not everybody reads that, though. They just take it as, okay, there's a lot of stuff in there. I'll get to that later. And later, once you're in the whirlwind train of now we've got a contract and all of this is going on, it's easy to drop the ball. So again, if you're a seller,
look for the Powerhouse Patty listing package and actually follow it. Or alternatively, the Powerhouse Michael selling package, which is just Patty's with her name scribbled out and mine written in.
We're not doing any self-promotion.
Time for comedy hour. Okay. In sort of a cynical way here. I received an email there a couple weeks ago that indicated that serving liquor at open houses is a very bad idea. And I can't say any more about that without expletives.
It is, in order to serve alcohol, and again, not having anything with regards to the legality clauses and requirements, but if you're serving alcohol at any function to the public, you need a liquor license. There's a little bit more involved. In our business, you also have your brokerage's policies and procedures that you need to be able to follow. What is their policy on having alcohol in that? Because you're responsible if that individual leaves your open house, whether it's an open house to the public or an agent open house that we do just for our fellow agents to be able to tour through, you know, some of the homes that we have listed so that they can maybe align a buyer to it. You're responsible if they get into an accident and whether they hurt themselves or somebody else. That's a really scary and very sad situation. I just wouldn't do it.
In a nutshell, it's a really bad idea to be serving alcohol, or these days, I don't know if they started serving marijuana at open houses, but don't do it. Because it would also tie into potentially common law. Isn't there some law that basically devalidates a contract if you've been drinking or drunk?
We're not allowed to have consumed any alcohol if we are signing a legal contract.
So keep that in mind at your open houses. Keep them weed and alcohol free. And if you're on social media, as a side note, we don't need to know every time you're doing a tequila shooter, drinking a glass of wine, or putting a beer away on your boat. Correct?
That I have no comment on.
Good.
Live your own life. Just keep your business and your personal life separate.
Looking at businesses, you've seen a lot of these commercial listings. You think, oh, what a great deal. It's a whatever. It's a pizza restaurant for $150, or it's a car detailing property or business for $40,000, or Betty's Yarn Barn is on sale for $125. What don't all these businesses offer that one would like to have with the purchase?
The building.
A building.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at these businesses, and I've had a couple clients do this in the last month thinking it's a great deal, it's only because the buildings aren't included, which if you are buying a business could be 90% of the value would be in the buildings or the intrinsic value or the equipment or whatever it could be. Next topic, we will skip down to PEI beaches. I meant to bring this up a long time ago. You come to PEI, automatically you gravitate to the national beaches, may they be Cavendish or Greenwich or wherever. Alternatively, there's the provincial beaches, which are actually quite nice too. I like Shelton. Cabot Park is awesome. But basically down every road, what are you going to find?
Beaches. So I'm going to let you know we have 1,100 kilometers of coastline on Prince Edward Island. There are over 90 beaches on PEI. There is approximately 65 kilometers only of the PEI National Parks beaches. We have hundreds of kilometers of beaches on Prince Edward Island all around that are great for just sunbathing, enjoying water activities, beach combing, which would consist of collecting sea glass or seashells or sand dollars. So there's lots of those types of, you know, beaches around the island. I will let you know, just if you're not from PEI, that because the waters are a little gentler on the Northumberland Straits side, you may actually find better treasures than you would on the north side, on the Gulf side of PEI, just because the waters are a little bit rougher, more chance for some of those rare treasures. Maybe the stones might be a little broken, and I mean seashells and that. So you might pick up better treasures on the Northumberland Strait. I have picked up treasures on both sides. Best time to go beach combing, in my opinion, is after a storm has gone through or crossed PEI. So whether it's a tropical storm, I didn't go out after Fiona, but I have taken my kids out on many occasions right after one of, you know, these storms that we have. And there's just an abundance of treasures and things that you can collect along the beach. So lots of awesome beaches, calmer, warmer on the Northumberland side, a little colder, a little more rough. You'll get the waves and that experience and being able to jump into them on the north side.
And when buying property, people like the South Shore because of the warmer waters, it's calmer, and they can see the mainland, typically Nova Scotia, sometimes the Confederation Bridge, some lighthouses, they can actually see something in the distance. Whereas the North Shore, being more oceanic, you'll actually experience the white caps, the winds, the harshness of living on the water. I was going to say the ocean, but it's technically the Gulf of St. Lawrence. We call it the ocean because it's much better for marketing than saying you're on the Gulf.
Yes.
Of course, we could rename it the Gulf of Canada now, couldn't we? Or we rename it the Gulf of Prince Edward Island. We'll just assume authority over it.
We're not going to do that, but you will get a more raw experience on the north side, which many do look for.
Right on. Thank you very much for listening to the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as Maps. Be sure to either subscribe if you're listening to this on YouTube, give the audio a thumbs up, comments, questions about PEI or PEI real estate, send them, text them, email, we'll get them answered.
You did my closing, but that's okay. Thanks for listening.
Different twist today.
We appreciate each and every one of you for downloading our episodes. And if you want a snapshot summary to decide or determine which episodes, if you are very selective, that you'd like to listen to, the Michael and Patty Show Facebook group, Moving to Prince Edward Island, also provides a summary so you can make that determination. Is this going to be relevant to me? Have a great day, and thanks for listening.
Take care. Bye for now.